Welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, the Inbox Edition. This is the one where we hand things over to you, your questions, your tech dilemmas. And this week, we're also going to quiz Jason on the biggest gaming flops.
I'm really looking forward to that one. But before we open up the inbox, a quick thank you to CEX for supporting this episode.
Yeah, because if you're eyeing up new tech, but those prices are making you wince, then CEX is well worth a look.
Yeah, they've got loads of refurbished gear, phones, consoles, games, laptops, cameras, all tested, all working. And usually much cheaper than buying brand new.
And if you've got gadgets at home that you're not using anymore, you can trade those in as well. Old phones, spare controller, forgotten tablet, turn them into something useful.
Yeah, you can get cash or store credit towards your next bit of kit. And everything comes with a 5-year warranty.
So if you're planning an upgrade or you just want to know what your tech is worth,
head to webuy.com or drop into your local CEX and see what you can find.
Right, shall we open the inbox?
Let's get stuck in.
Right then, let's get into our first question for this week's Inbox Edition from Barclay Thompson. Have you used the DJI Osmo Action 5 Pro? I'm looking at it mainly for our POV countryside walks and general outdoor footage. So I'd be interested to hear real opinions before I go for it. Well, we have, haven't we, Jace?
Well, I've got one.
Yeah.
And I've been in the surf with it in Newquay, done a couple of other things with it. but yeah, we had a look at it, didn't we? I think, Suze, in our Christmas special. Yeah, I mean, country walks, yeah, it's a heck of an action camera for country walks. The big win with it is their stabilisation, I'd say. So, you know, they're kind of rock steady stabilisation. So if you're romping around, you know, uneven ground, it's going to work for that. It's more for kind of like wobbling around on the handlebars of a downhill mountain bike, though. So it'll definitely handle what you're after. Battery life is another big plus. Better than most action cams. Mine actually came with multiple batteries, so look at the different packages available. So I'm never without power for mine. Really easy to operate. Front screen as well, I seem to remember. It's been a few weeks since I've used it. But importantly, the image quality is absolutely extraordinary. Really good low light performance, I seem to remember. Good in bright skies down here on the coast. One thing to flag, if you're coming from something like a, you know, GoPro Hero 12 Black, for example, the ecosystem, all the mounts, etc. I'd say that ecosystem's stronger in GoPro, you know, possibly because that whole brand has been around for a bit longer. But purely for walking, outdoors, POV stuff, yeah, I think it's absolutely brilliant. Some really good modes as well for wide and I forget what it's called, but like super wide and things like that. So you can capture your walks in style.
Yeah, let us know how you get on and send us some footage.
So this one's from Mike Bookham. Now, Susie, you and Otis were talking about, was it Hutchinson? Orange.
Yeah, Orange were Hutchinson when they launched here and I did all the photo shoots for them.
Yeah, really?
Okay. Really, how about really this? Long time ago, obviously. Yeah.
What? What Mike Bookham's asking about is if you remember the Rabbit C2 handsets from the 90s. I actually had a set for home use back then. This is Mike, not me. Do you remember those?
The Rabbit phones. Yeah. Yeah. So for anyone that doesn't remember, the Rabbit CT2, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was this slightly strange halfway house between a landline and a mobile. So you had these little base stations, effectively, usually on lampposts. And if you were in the range, you could make calls. But the catch was, you had to really be in the range. Like, you had to kind of be right there, close to a base station. If you moved a few steps away, you'd completely lose the signal. It was a really good idea on paper. Cheap mobile calls before they were a thing. But the coverage just wasn't there. And proper cellular networks absolutely steamrolled it, obviously, when they came out. But fair play. If you had one at home, then you were basically living the dream, living the future for about 6 months before it all got squashed. So, yeah, thanks for that one. Here's one from Colin Jones, Jace. This is after your interview with Panos.
From Amazon, yeah.
What is Amazon's privacy policy concerning all the data they're gathering on their customers? That must be an information goldmine.
Yeah, so Amazon, obviously, like so many of these big digital corporations, are able to offer us a lot of hardware, I guess, and this is just me vibing, based on the value that can be extracted from your data. They collect huge amounts of data, what you buy, obviously, what you browse, so the stuff you don't buy, what you watch on Prime, what you ask Alexa for, you know. According to their privacy policy, that data is used to personalize recommendations, improve services, and, let's be honest, sell more stuff, you know, more effectively. Now, they do say they don't sell your personal data to third parties in the traditional sense, but they absolutely use it within their own ecosystem for targeted advertising. And yeah, you're right, it's an absolute gold mine. It is. It's very, very valuable. It's one of the reasons Amazon is so well positioned in the market. They don't just know what people buy, they know what people almost buy. The key thing for users, I think, is, you know, you manage a lot of this in your account settings, right? So voice recordings, ad preferences, all that. I think the key message from our podcast is that you do have some control over this, okay? So, you know, users can manage a lot of stuff like settings for voice recordings, ad preferences, etc. in settings. But let's be honest, most of us don't do that. I don't know exactly what you can and cannot manipulate, control, you know, have some sort of meaningful options about, but there are options, but I've never even bothered. So that's, I think that's interesting. Great question though, really. Really,
they rely on people not bothering, really.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Here's one from Matthew Walker, and this is off the back of the episode we did with Otis when we were talking about cashless society.
Yeah.
The cashless thing's really convenient 90% of the time, is what Matthew's saying, but I can't stand it when places don't accept cash. I always carry a bit of cash on me, or at least I have a bit stashed at home, because guess what, kids? Sometimes electricity fails. Those floods in Spain last year, for example, God, they were terrible. Entire towns had no electric for about a week, and because so many shops relied on card payments and entire systems were down. As with the ATMs, nobody was able to buy anything. It was catastrophic. The only people that were able to buy food and drink were those clever enough to have a bit of cash in their pockets.
Wow.
Even if actual power outage is pretty rare, mobile phones aren't exactly incapable of failure, are they? I mean, that those are all really good points. And you can guarantee also, when you have got cash in your pocket and you go to a place, they're the ones that don't accept cash. I like it when they accept cash, because I don't want everything to be tracked and trackable. And with cash, it's just that, you know what I'm like about freedom, and it's just sort of
I mean, I'm with you all the way. In this one, I'm absolutely with you, because we get taxed within an inch of our lives. But if you want to go to a car boot sale and sell a couple of things, you should be able to do it. And so I think it's really important.
Yeah, so I think having both, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I still like physical money, because it makes me feel like I can get out of an emergency. I think it's going back to, you know, when I was a brownie and you had to have 2p on you in case you needed to make a phone call. It's just, I like to have a bit of money as an emergency. I've always got a bit in the back of my phone case.
Your knickers.
Emergency 20 quid I've got in here. In fact, I've got some foreign money. I'm going to show you what I've got in here. Look.
Hang on, I'm looking.
I've got a bit of Thai money. Useless in Wolverhampton.
Nice.
I need to change that. Anyway, I agree with you completely on that. Cash basically is the ultimate backup system, isn't it? No batteries, no signal, no software updates or anything. I think we'll land where we'll land. It is mostly cashless, but not cash free, if you know what I mean. Because the moment you remove cash entirely, then you lose that resilience. And also, this is the bit that people forget. It's about choice, which is what I'm talking about. Some people need cash, whether that's for budgeting or accessibility, and removing it completely shuts them out. So there you go. Those are some good thoughts there. Thank you for those.
Richard Thompson, with the price of modern gaming, are we going to lose the AAA blockbuster? It does feel a bit like AAA gaming is heading for a bit of a crunch moment, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's been some, partly because there's been some really successful, we'll call them indie games. I mean, they still have massive development budgets, but they're priced, you know, at a much more reasonable sort of, you know, 20 quid or whatever. And when you've got games like Grand Theft Auto 6 costing eye-wateringly huge amounts to make, the stakes are really high. I mean, they're so high that you could argue that, is it worth the risk anymore to make a massive AAA title what you get is fewer releases, longer development times, which is what we're seeing. A lot more sequels and remakes because they're, you know, deemed safe bets. But sometimes that's disappointing to an audience that crave innovation, you know. Really interesting. You heard of, as well, Susie, I'm sure you did, of the layoffs at Epic around Fortnite. That was headline news all around the world. Interestingly, all the creativity is kind of sort of bubbling, I think, below that level. I'm not going to say that I'm not super excited about Grand Theft Auto 6, because I am, and actually I will pay the premium price for it. But I would say it's almost in a class of its own, right? When it comes to other titles, you know, things like Call of Duty and stuff, like, where does that sit now when you can buy something like Ark Raiders, which you know I love because we've got some exclusive content of me playing the brand new Flashpoint update for our Patreon subscribers. It's on the Patreon right now. I think it was £30 I paid for that game, and I've played nothing but Ark Raiders over Christmas, over a period when massive AAA titles were coming out. So interesting times. I can't predict where it's going to go. I don't know. I really don't know, Richard, but definitely want to watch. Let's maybe check in on this. It could drive maybe an item in, you know, in the main podcast at some point. Right, time for something very exciting. The brand new Gadget Show competition is live. But time is running out to get involved. We're giving away £5,000 to spend at CEX. And yes, that is as amazing as it sounds.
And this competition is just for our core listeners on Patreon. So the number of entries stays sensible, which means that your chances are actually pretty good.
Yeah, but you need to move quickly. To enter, head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and sign up to one of our paid tiers. They start at about the price of a cup of coffee. There are three levels, light, mid and max.
Yeah, so light gives you one entry, mid gives you three and max gives you five. So if you want to boost your chances before the clock runs out, then that's the one to go for.
I love it. So once you've signed up, send us a direct message on Patreon with the answer to this question. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006 or D, 2007?
And remember, you're not just entering the competition.
Yeah, you'll also get ad-free episodes, early access, bonus content.
And if you're on the max tier, you will unlock the entire Gadget Show archive. Over 20 years of the show, nearly 500 episodes. It's a proper little treasure trove.
Cool. So, extra content, better odds, and the chance to win a £5,000 tech shopping spree. Don't hang about, though. Entries are closing soon. Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to get involved.
You'll find the full terms and conditions linked in this episode. Right, Jason, it's tech quiz time.
Oh, good.
And this one is about, as we mentioned, the biggest gaming flops by the estimated money loss, okay?
Wow. Oh, wow. I don't know how I'll do in this one.
So I'm going to read out 10 in a random order. You've got to place them, with number one being the worst performing, okay?
Yeah, I'm scared, but ready.
Here we go, then. Where would you put Google Stadia?
7.
4.
Oh, I always start with 7.
You do. You always start with 7. So 500 million to a billion loss.
Wow, my God.
So you could stream your games instantly until the whole thing disappeared. Stadia's tech worked, but its business model didn't. Google invested heavily in the infrastructure, studios and partnership before closing it down. Most credible estimates place the loss comfortably within hundreds of millions, with some pushing towards the billion mark. There we go. How about the Apple Pippin, as we've talked about it this week?
I would have said that Google Stadia, with a sort of online cloud-based component, was more expensive to develop. So I'm going to go for my favourite number, 7.
9!
9, yeah. Not far off.
Yeah, not far off. So Apple Pippin lost 80 to 120 million. That's what it's estimated at. Apple tried gaming in the 90s and pretty much nobody noticed.
Yeah,
short-lived console experiments sold fewer than 50,000 units.
Wow, that's incredible.
What about the N-Gage?
Yeah, the Nokia.
Yeah, so tried to merge a phone and a console, but ended up being a little bit awkward at both of them.
Can you guess what number I'm going to say?
Don't say 7.
5.
8.
5. Really? Eight? Okay. Yeah,
eight. It lost between 250 and 400 million. Those are the estimates.
Yeah, I really loved it. And I had my little Tony Hawk's Pro Skater cart. I remember that. I think that's still in my drawer, which is why I remember it. I don't remember that many of the games, but fond memories despite its commercial failure.
Okay, would you put the Sega Dreamcast? So it was innovative and really well liked, but it launched just before the PS2 hype machine, which obviously took over.
I just loved my Dreamcast. So it breaks my heart, but I'm going to go 5.
300 million to 400 million was the loss for Sega Dreamcast.
Wow.
So it places it at 5. What about Nintendo's Virtual Boy? Bold step into virtual reality that literally gave players headaches. Literally. Nintendo's early VR experiment was ambitious, but it was flawed, essentially.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I would imagine it was a very expensive thing to develop with that unique red display and that's... I mean, you're not borrowing components from anything, are you? You know what I mean? You're bespoke from the ground up. That is a total out there thing. Whereas at least the Dreamcast is a kind of iteration of other consoles. So I feel like it's going to be... But then they gave up after a year, whereas the Dreamcast, they kept going, thank God.
It depends where you cut your losses, literally, doesn't it?
4. 6. 7. How interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Difficult one to call that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all difficult to call. What about the Atari Jaguar? So bold 64-bit marketing. The Jaguar's confusing architecture and lack of strong games led to poor
controller.
Sales.
Controller. I mean, God. I never owned one, so I can't relate to it in the way I can. Even the Virtual Boy, which I've played a lot with. In fact, I'd like to get the new version of it for the Switch 2. But Jaguar, 3? 6. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, Atari Jaguar, number 6. They lost between 200 and 300 million on it.
I'm surprised it was such a big loss.
How much did the PlayStation Vita lose? Brilliant. Portable PlayStation that gamers didn't just buy in big enough numbers.
Yeah, I always
where does that sit, do you think?
I struggle to remember the difference between the Vita and the PSP. The Vita is, of course, the smaller of the two, isn't it? It's the more evolved version. Again, you know, as a product, as a piece of design, it's gorgeous. It's not as gorgeous as the PSP. Like, the Vita, I've got less of a relationship with. I don't know. 10?
It's actually number 2.
No.
They lost between 800 mil and $1 billion.
No, they didn't.
They did.
They really went in for that then. They really went all in.
Yep.
Wow.
Right, you got 3 left.
Go on then.
Numbers 1, 3 and 10.
Okay.
Ouya. Big hype, tiny box. Smaller impact.
You're not kidding. I don't think it's going to be big numbers in terms of negative numbers because it wasn't a big deal.
Well, it raised money on Kickstarter, didn't it? It raised millions on Kickstarter.
Yeah. I'm going to say number 10.
You are correct.
Oh, cool. Thank God for that.
Well done. Lost between 10 and 30 million after raising millions on Kickstarter. It promised a revolution in accessible gaming, but weak performance, lack of standout titles meant that obviously it faded away quite quickly. 2 to go then. You've got number 1 and number 3.
Why don't you give me the last 2 and I'll do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Right, so you've got the Philips CDI.
Yeah.
And you have got the Sega Saturn. One's at 1 and one's at 3.
No doubt Sega Saturn's number 1 and that would make the Philips number 2. And I'll tell you my logic before you... I can't see you, so you may have shown me with your face whether I'm terribly wrong.
Well, the Philips is... you've got 1 and 3, so you're right. Philips is number 3, you're correct, and the Sega Saturn is number 1. What's your reasoning behind that?
Just based on the fact that the Sega Saturn was such a big deal, and for it therefore to make this list means that they lost big. It's like going to Vegas and putting $1 million on black on the roulette table. And,
kind of lost it overnight as well. They lost a console
incredible.
Overnight. They lost a reported $1 billion on it.
Whoa, wow. And what about the Philips? What sort of numbers? 800 million?
Well, similar. Actually, similar numbers, estimated between 800 and $1 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. So really expensive mistake for them. They poured a huge amount of investment into the CDI as a multimedia platform, as you know, not just a console. But weak software, high pricing and confused positioning led to massive losses, often cited in the high hundreds of millions, approaching $1 billion overall. So they're all big ones. The top three are massive.
Hey, I really enjoyed that. I know I don't feel I really did that well this week, but I really enjoyed that. Some really interesting facts that I shall use in life going forward.
Okay, excellent. I'll send you my notes. And on that note, that's it for this week's Inbox Edition. A huge thank you very much for all the messages, questions and stories that you've been sending in. Thank you. Please keep them coming because we do genuinely love going through them. Anything you can think of, actually, we're open, aren't we?
Absolutely. Genuinely, it's one of our favourite parts of the show, whether it's a tech disaster, you know, a bargain that you're particularly proud of, something weird that you found in a drawer, like my N-Gage cartridges, send them our way via socials, or you can email us at contact@north1.tv, North One O-N-E.
And thank you, as always, to CEX for supporting the podcast. And if you're thinking about upgrading, hunting down something retro, or trading in the tech that you don't use anymore, then head to webuy.com or visit your local CEX. And don't forget that everything they sell comes with a 5-year warranty.
Yes. And please don't forget to follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it or watching it. The Main Gadget Show podcast drops every week with the latest tech news, reviews and whatever, you know, chaos we've managed to get ourselves into.
Before we go, I just want to show you my new T-shirt.
Let's have a look.
Fleetwood absolutely, Mac, obviously Deadcaller, absolutely. Bought it in Austin. In a vinyl record
beautiful.
Shop called Waterloo, where I spent about half a day. And on that note, see you soon.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.